carries in, scores! Patrick Laine snaps it. What a goal by Laine.
Gotta throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting, it's off of Hellebuck. Rebound, side of the net. Stopped by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Hey! Johnson scores. Sidney Crosby.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by highlight. Stand by host. You big boys.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Smile, everyone.
With Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manouk.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Little back up top for Myers. Near side now for Ehlers. Moves in, let a shot go. He scores! Nikolai Ehlers beats Gibson short side. It's a power play goal, and it's 2-0 Winnipeg.
That proved to be the game-winning goal last yesterday afternoon, I suppose, in Anaheim, as the Jets lead from start to finish a commanding 4-1 victory over the Anaheim Ducks, improving their record to 2 wins and 1 loss on this 4-game road trip. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of Jets talk for you on this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can send us a text message in studio. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. If you send a good text or if you send a good tweet, maybe we'll read it on air, maybe not. I choose to use my prerogative as I deem. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
I'm your sinking here, Drew,
yeah,
by the way.
It's the chair. You're using the sinking chair. You can't. It has to do where you place your feet on that chair, like on the back of underneath of the chair. If you hit the hydraulic in the wrong way, the chair sinks.
What is this, an engineering show?
That's usually my chair, so I've sat in it for a lot of years at this point in time. I'm aware that that is the sinking chair, and you have to be very delicate and careful with how you sit in that chair.
I didn't realize that you had to have a PhD in mathematics to operate this chair, but obviously I've put some weight on or something because
you're sitting about 3 feet below everybody.
Yeah, you're the incredible shrinking Ezzy right now, which is sort of entertaining to watch as you're in the middle of the segment as you're dropping down lower and lower and lower from where your microphone is originally positioned.
It's okay, Drew. I don't want to be eye to eye with you. It's okay if I'm looking up at you.
There you go. You can look up at me. You know, I assume you always look up at me, but that's just a sort of an ego boost for me as opposed to anything else. That voice was Ezra Ginsberg, the man who's on his far left. Dave Manouk is
in a good chair.
Yep. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. Like we said, we start with yesterday afternoon in Anaheim, the Jets with a commanding victory, 4-1 over the Anaheim Ducks. What can you say about this Winnipeg Jets team, guys? They truly do seem as though they are for real. They had the bad game on Monday in Nashville, and they've bounced back from that defeat, and they won the last two games, Los Angeles on Wednesday right before U.S. Thanksgiving, and then yesterday afternoon, Black Friday. They were the better team from start to finish against Anaheim. They get that goal early. It's disallowed. They don't miss a beat, and they score, 20 seconds later. In the game action, they get the goal. That one counts. It's Ehlers, his ninth, and boom, they're on their way to another victory last night.
Yeah, Drew, I thought yesterday afternoon's game was the most impressive of the three, and obviously the game on Monday, no one's going to say that was an impressive game, but I didn't even think that was a bad game, guys. I thought it was really one bad period. The second period where they got into some penalty trouble and they allowed Nashville to score those two power play goals, for me, it was really that period that sunk them. I thought they were pretty good in the third period. They made it close. Actually, if Mark Scheifele scores there, the Jets pull within one goal of the Nashville Predators. If you remember, Scheifele hit the post there. So yesterday, to me, was just an example of a patient, structured hockey team. Mm-hmm. It looked like the Jets guys were in control of that game from start to finish. And you mentioned, Drew, when Mark Scheifele's goal is disallowed and then Ehlers scores, I believe it was something like 15 seconds later, 20 seconds later.
Yeah, well, Scheifele scored at the 28-second mark.
Right.
Then they reviewed it and it was ruled offside, so the clock goes back
right.
to when the offside actually was, which was, I think, at the 12-second mark.
Sure.
And then 28 seconds later is when, on the game clock, is when Ehlers scores. So at the 40-second mark, they led 1-0 officially.
And Dave, that can be a killer not only in your home rink, but especially on the road, right? And, you know, Nikolai Ehlers, guys, has been struggling to put the puck in the net. I believe he entered the game having not scored a goal in his previous 8 games,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to see him not only get that goal early in the game, but then he scores, you know, well, I guess the second goal was still early in the game, but not as early, coming about 4 minutes later on the power play. So, you know, you like to see Nikolai Ehlers get on the score sheet and score some goals. And, you know, that goal that Brian Little scored was almost a carbon copy of the goal that Ehlers scored earlier. It kind of just moved in and took a wrist shot that beat John Gibson short side. So overall, just a really impressive game. Connor Hellebuck was really solid, but he didn't need to steal the game. I thought that the Ducks looked like a team that really missed their number one and number two centers. I didn't think that they were much of a threat for most of the game offensively. The Jets kept most of the shots to the outside. So the last two games have been very impressive, you know, as you rebound from that tough loss in Nashville. And if you think about it, guys, tonight against San Jose, whatever they do against San Jose is gravy, because in my opinion, it's already been a successful road trip.
Yeah, and I think, like, it used to be that California used to be a murderer's row when you'd go in there and play these teams, and they were all heavy teams, and you know, the games were going to take a certain toll out of you. And I think that, you know, the Jets have fared well, as you just touched on, Ezzie, and they played well, and they played their brand of hockey. Yesterday's game for me had a little bit of that Flyers game here in Winnipeg last week, you know, when the Jets gave up a early couple of goals, and then, you know, they slowly crept their way back in. And I thought, had Brian Little scored on John Gibson early in that second period when he had that kind of point-blank shot, and Gibson made a very nice save, cross-crease save, but the fact is that that could have blown it open, because I thought at that point the Jets were really starting to dominate in the second. And, you know, it allowed Anaheim to stay in it, and of course they made it 2-1 on that Beauchemin kind of knuckle puck that beat Hellebuck through a screen. But then, of course, they regained the 2-goal lead when Little actually got another goal, or got the goal, his third of the season. So I thought the key to me for that game wasn't so much the fact that I felt that the Jets were going to win it, but it was more the fact that that second line finally got a result. And that was, like, you know, we talked about it in last week's show about, you know, the second line and whether they were gelling, and now you're seeing an opportunity for that kind of the patience coming through and not bringing out the line blender and trying to fix it right away, because the truth was the Jets were winning. If the Jets were losing, then you can understand why Paul Maurice wouldn't have patience with that second line. I mean, the truth is, and you know, we touched on it, and it's just the fact that individually, you know, Patrick Laine had 11 goals, Nikolai Ehlers had 8 going into that.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact was, it wasn't like they weren't having individual success. Just as a line collectively, they didn't appear to be gelling or playing the way, you know, you thought with that talent they should have been, because some of those goals were on the power play.
They hadn't done it 5-on-5.
That's right. And so just we saw in yesterday's game, and again, you know, it's hard to take yesterday's game at full face value, simply because when you're losing, when you don't have Getzlaff and you don't have Kessler in the game, those are two fairly significant names to not be in
but
the lineup.
But for so many years, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Dave, that the Anaheim Ducks are not the Anaheim Ducks that we're used to seeing, because they have
They're treading water right now.
Yeah, but for so many years, we've seen the Jets play down to the level of their opponent. And, you know, it would not have been a surprise last year if the Jets had faced an opponent that was riddled with injuries and still managed to lose the game. What impressed me most about yesterday afternoon's game is that they were, at no point in time during that game did you think the Jets were at risk of losing. They were the better of the two teams from start to finish. They imposed their will on the opponent, and sure, it's a weakened opponent, but you can only play against the opponents you have. I mean, you play the hand you're dealt, and the Jets came out. It's a cliche at this point, but they started right, and they were the better of the two teams right from start to finish, and it wasn't a stressful game in that sense, that they were the better of the two teams really from start to finish, and it showed in their play on the ice, it showed on the scoreboard. And yeah, they're playing against a weakened opponent, but they get full marks in my books for taking advantage of that weakened opponent, where so many other times and so many years
mm-hmm,
previous, they wouldn't take advantage of that opponent.
Drew, there's absolutely no doubt that this is a confident team right now,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that's what you're getting at. And even though the Ducks are without Kessler and they're without Getzlaff, and Patrick Eves unfortunately has that health condition, you've still got Corey Perry, you've still got Ricard Raquel, Silverberg's a good player. Andrew Cogliano is still a great player. Antoine Vermette, top faceoff guy in the league. And that defense, guys, is getting healthier. Actually, they're completely healthy now. And, you know, Cam Fowler, Hampus Lindholm, Josh Manson, Sammy Vatanen, Brandon Montour, you know, came up from the American Hockey League with the San Diego Gulls last year. I mean, John Gibson's a good goaltender. Yeah. It's not like the Anaheim Ducks are a bottom feeder in the NHL,
it's not
right?
Like they're the Arizona Coyotes or anything
right.
like
so,
that.
I mean,
yeah, they have
you know,
talent still.
Pretty sure that now you have to say they're not the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, I guess right. that's actually
and,
not the Oilers.
And the Ducks, you know, went to the Western Conference Final last year, right? So don't get me wrong, Drew. I still think that the Nashville Predators were the best team that the Jets have faced this year, maybe with the exception of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about this Ducks team, they looked very flat early on, and I think, you know, to the Jets' credit, they took the wind out of the sails of the Ducks early, and they didn't let them get back in it. As we talked about, Boschman's goal, let's be honest, that was a lucky knuckle puck, fluke goal.
It 2 feet.
Yeah. And there weren't stages of that game where there was too much sustained pressure. I mean, for me, the best chances came on the power play, and again, for me, that's something that needs to be mentioned. The special teams have come through on this road trip.
With the
exception of that Nashville game.
The Nashville game was a bad effort from really start to finish. Bad second
right,
period,
right.
And that's what cost them the entire game. But you're right. When you have two power play goals yesterday against Anaheim, you don't give up anything shorthanded. I mean, they're playing disciplined hockey. They're playing smart hockey. They aren't the Jets that we've seen for the last 6-7 years. They look like a completely different outfit.
I think a lot of that, sorry Dave, I was going to say, is I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the fact that they had the winning streak earlier in the season, right? Since they lost those two games back to back, they haven't lost back to get back games since then, right?
They haven't earned points. They did lose back to back to Columbus and Pittsburgh.
Sorry, I meant in regulation.
Right, but they get points. So even when you're right, but I mean, you lose against Nashville on Monday. And so what do you come back with? You come back with two straight victories. When you do that, when you don't let losing streaks snowball, or you always at least earn a point here or there, you know, success is what's going
to
happen.
I think it's twofold. I think one is the team is trying not to read their press clippings too closely, and I think that they're just trying to, I mean, as cliche as it sounds, and I'm loath to even say it, but like they're really just trying to take it one game and not look too far down the line. So tonight they're only looking at San Jose. They're not focusing on the next game on Monday against Minnesota, I think.
Minnesota
right?
and Colorado next week.
Right. So they can't look ahead to those games, and that really is a focus, and you hear it. And the truth is, like, after a win, I'm sure they're happy, but, you know, the reality is that they're not outwardly saying anything other than
surprised by the win anymore.
Well, yeah, that's true, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that they're not getting too high. They're not allowing the elation to grow in their voice, because the reality is everybody knows that the Jets team right now, as they're presently constructed, if everybody stays the way they are, which, you know, is hard in the NHL, but still, is currently a playoff team, and they're most likely going to be a playoff team. So the fact is, but these guys aren't allowing that to kind of seep into their game. They're keeping their focus very narrow and keeping it on the game ahead of them. So that's key. And then the other thing I think it's interesting is the fact that, you know, Josh Morrissey was asked whether losing those two games to start the season and the way they did, it wasn't just that they lost, but they lost badly to Calgary and Toronto, that maybe that was kind of a good thing because it kind of woke this team up. They went on the road, obviously, to Edmonton and Vancouver, and played fairly good games. So, you know, they still weren't great, but the fact is it kind of gelled them as a team a little bit. So I think from that perspective, the team's really just, as you guys just touched on, they haven't really looked back since the opening two games of the season, right? So this team has, you know, and I guess, you know, as a Winnipegger, people just kind of expect, you know, you can't have a nice thing, and you kind of expect it to come back down to earth. But the reality is the way the Jets are playing, they just keep moving forward, and they just keep putting those points on the board and points in the standings bank, and they keep winning. And Drew, to your point earlier, the fact is that this is a team that, you know, you would have expected to maybe have a letdown game here and there. And you know, sure, the Nashville game, as Ez said, was the toughest game of this road trip for them, without a question. But the fact is, they very easily could have had a, you know, 1-3 road trip and said, okay, well, we're still in the playoff position. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're 2-1, poised to go 3-1 against the San Jose team that's not, you know, playing its best hockey right now. So, I mean, this is a Jets team that just keeps moving forward and up and up and up. So it's interesting.
It certainly is positive, good vibes, good feelings around the Winnipeg Jets organization, around True North, because the Moose won last night as well.
They did.
I mean, the two Winnipeg-based professional hockey teams are absolutely on fire and have been for the last 2 weeks or so.
Right, and having said that, guys, they don't give you a playoff spot after 22 games.
They don't.
And, you know, Dave makes a good point about, you know, how they don't seem to be looking back, and they're focused on, you know, each game that's coming in front of them. And really, I think what's the most important, too, is that you don't see, you know, a different Jets team from night to night. They're playing the same way. Mm-hmm. And even in losses, like even against Nashville, even against Vegas, you're seeing a similar style of play. And that's something that you haven't seen in previous years.
Well, that's what coaches want. Coaches want consistency. They want to know what they can expect on a night-in, night-out basis. And the Jets are providing that for Paul Maurice and the Jets coaching staff. When we come back, as you mentioned, we're about a quarter of the way through the season, a little more than a quarter of the way through. So we're going to go through the forwards, the defensemen, and the goaltenders and talk about which players are meeting our expectations, which players are exceeding our expectations, and which players are disappointing us. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Shifley for Wheeler. Wheeler looking for Shifley. Scores! Blake Wheeler to Mark Shifley, and Mark Shifley has tied this game with his 11th of the year.
Blake Wheeler and Mark Shifley, two of the catalysts to the Jets' great start to the 2017-18 season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, this segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. I'm not sure. Was Corey Perry wearing a mouth guard yesterday afternoon when Ben Chiarot gave him the bit of a butt end to the jaw? I wasn't 100% sure if he was or not. Just quickly, because I know that some people have been maybe pushing an agenda. Any thought, any chance, any expectation that there's supplemental discipline for Ben Chiarot?
I don't think so. I think at best he gets a fine, but the idea that he's going to get a suspension because Corey Perry went after him out in a scrum is kind of loony to me. So I think at best he gets a... maybe a fine or a call.
Is he?
No suspension for me.
There you go. So with judge, jury, and executioners here have determined that Ben Chiarot is in the clear.
I just didn't think it was that bad.
No, it certainly wasn't. As I mentioned, the season is about a quarter of the way through, so we're going to go through the Jets forward groups this segment and look at which players are matching our expectations, our preseason expectations, which players are exceeding them, and which players are underachieving. We're going to start with the Jets' ostensibly number one center. That's Mr. Mark Shifley. 25 points in 22 games played, 11 goals, 14 assists, sort of picking up where he left off last year on that breakthrough season for him. Hasn't missed a beat, 1.14 points per game played. I mean, I'm assuming that Mark Shifley is he matching expectations? Did the bar get raised high enough last year that he's only matching them? Or is he exceeding what your preseason expectations were?
For me, he's exceeding them. And I had very high expectations for Mark Shifley, and I think we all did. As you mentioned, Drew, last year was his breakout season, not only points-wise, but I think the way he took command of certain games. And, you know, Blake Wheeler and Mark Shifley are both, you know, top 20 in the NHL in scoring right now. They didn't get themselves on the score sheet yesterday, but that was a rare game where they weren't on the score sheet. But for me, really, it's the way Shifley has really shown that not only can he have an impact offensively for this Jets team, but he's gotten better and more responsible defensively. And so for me, he exceeds expectations. And it's not just the point totals. I think it's his leadership and what he's doing without the puck, because I think he's shown this year that he has a more well-rounded game.
Dave, matching or exceeding? I'm assuming that you're not disappointed with his performance,
no,
but I could be wrong.
You know what? No, I think he's exceeded. I thought I had a certain level of expectation for Mark Shifley coming in, which was already high, but I think that he's just raised the bar, and him and Blake Wheeler, who I suspect we'll be touching on next, they've just collectively raised their games together. And I think that, you know, the perfect example for me was the way Shifley pulled that move on Lindholm last night in the game, or yesterday afternoon in the game. He just kind of danced around him, and Lindholm was not exactly a slouch on defense. So I just think that Mark Shifley just continues to define his game. It feels like he's gotten faster this season, so he's definitely exceeded expectations for me.
Next up is the man who flanks him on the right wing. That's Blake Wheeler. Here's what Tim Campbell had to say about Blake Wheeler on Tuesday afternoon.
But I just don't think a lot of folks around the NHL see Blake Wheeler and watch Blake Wheeler and then say, yeah, he's playing as well as, you know, pick a name, Patrick Kane or John Tavares or any of the other elite players you would consider around the league. I just don't think people have made the connection quite yet.
Blake Wheeler, guys, matching, exceeding, underachieving. This is a guy who's got 20 assists and 5 goals for 25 points. Same number as Scheifele. Goal totals might be a little lower than you expect, but the primary assists and the assist totals really are tremendous for Blake Wheeler so far this year.
Right, and you know, I think Tim Campbell nailed it there. And
It was a great question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was all about the question.
It was
Drew.
All about the question. It was all about the host. That was me.
You were hosting on Tuesday. Yeah. Huss was in. In Ottawa.
Yeah.
I mean, like, let's be honest here, guys. Like, Blake Wheeler has been the Jets' best offensive player, arguably, since the Jets came over from Atlanta. And, you know, the expectations, again, are high for Blake Wheeler. And, you know, Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, they're kind of inseparable. And that's maybe why Paul Maurice has kept them together all year, even though, you know, Patrick Laine and Brian Little have had their individual struggles. Nikolai Ehlers has had their individual struggles. But Blake Wheeler, for me, is still not considered elite. But, you know, I'm going to say exceeding expectations, even though, again, I think Blake Wheeler's expectations for myself were even higher than Mark Scheifele. Those two are obviously at the top. But when you're talking about what he does in a game-in, game-out basis, I mean, it's just unparalleled. And, you know, that says a lot when you're giving Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler a plus one when your expectations were really high. Like, we're talking about both guys probably getting around 85 or 90 points if they stay on pace to what they're on right now. And, you know, it's just been incredible to watch these two because they can be a threat every time they're on the ice.
Dave?
Plus one. No, I honestly
just wanted to do that.
No, I mean, yeah, the goal totals are definitely not what they were, but he does so many different things in the game. He drives the game. His speed creates so many opportunities for his line mates. You know, Kyle Connor's up to 6 goals. I mean, yesterday was an empty net goal, but still, you know, Mark Scheifele's has 11. So, I mean, Blake Wheeler really is taking on a different sort of role, which is his shooting percentage is definitely a little bit lower than traditionally. It's usually over 10%. Now it's around 7.5%, I think. So, so a little bit lower than what you would expect for Blake Wheeler simply because what he's shown previously. But, I mean, yeah, he's definitely continuing to drive the bus. And, you know, I mean, look, he's the captain of the team. He has to come out. He has to talk to us all the time. And, he's handled it very well. He's handled the responsibility. And so in the totality, I would say he's exceeded expectations.
The left winger on that line is a guy who didn't actually start with the team outside of training camp. It's hard to remember that Kyle Connor was started the season with the AHL's Manitoba Moose. Since the call-up, when Matthew Perreault went down with his injury, Connor's got 6 goals, 6 assists, 12 points in 17 games in his rookie year. Ezzy, exceeding, matching, or underachieving for Kyle Connor?
Yeah, Drew, you just mentioned the point totals there. For me, it's exceeding, and, you know, Kyle Connor surprised us a little bit by not making the opening night roster, but I think for me it's exceeding expectations because not only is he producing, but he's producing on the top line. And you could say, well, of course he's producing, he's playing with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, the Jets' two best players. But for me, you know, there's a little bit more added responsibility and pressure on Kyle Connor to play on that top line and produce on that top line. And Kyle Connor has done this at the American Hockey League level, and he's done this for the University of Michigan. He was a top player in NCAA hockey, but now he's in the NHL playing for a team that wants to get back into the playoffs. And I think, you know, we've seen him use his speed very well, and I think he's adapted to the NHL game and some of the things that he was struggling with last year. And he developed his game in the American Hockey League last year, and now he's showing us that, you know, he's here to stay.
Yeah, I would say he's, I mean, I had a lot of expectations of him simply because I watched him in the AHL last year and I know how good a player he can be. But the fact is, and as he touched on it, it's the key point to me, is the fact that there are huge expectations when you go up on that first line. And his speed is his weapon, and he's been able to match the speed of Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. And he hasn't looked bad on the line. It's not simply that he's just filling a spot and he gets a tap-in goal simply because those two are creating everything. He's using his legs. He's creating. There's still obviously improvements to his game. But I would say he's at least met my expectations, if not exceeded them.
Second line center is Brian Little. He certainly had a bit of a slower start to the year. Seems like he's picking it up as of late. 3 goals, 9 assists for 12 points in 22 games for Brian Little. Ezzy, matching, exceeding, or disappointing for Brian Little through 22 games?
Yeah, Brian Little has to be disappointing, unfortunately. And, you know, if you've listened to this show over the last 6 years since the Jets came back, you know that Dave and I especially are big fans of Brian Little's game, but he just hasn't produced offensively enough at 5-on-5. And you saw him yesterday score on the power play. And to me, Brian Little is an excellent power play player, and he's a good faceoff guy. He's been very dependable for the Jets in the faceoff circle. But this year, he just hasn't found that chemistry that you'd like to see with Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers. And we've talked about this for several weeks now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. But, you know, they're just he leaves more to be desired. And, you know, I'm not sure what it is about Brian Little this year, because he's healthy as opposed to last year when he missed, you know, the first 20 games of the year. But, you know, 3 goals for Brian Little after 22 games, you just expect more out of him.
I'm going to be a bit of an easier marker. I think maybe my mom was a teacher. Yeah. She'll be disappointed. But I think that I would say
she was a French teacher, though, right?
She was a French teacher. Okay. That's true. Nothing to do with mathematics.
Or
hockey. But I would say that he's kind of met my expectations. And the reason I say that is because, well, Ezzie's 100% right. His offensive numbers aren't what you would expect them to be. He's playing with two young guys, and he's kind of having to kind of be that elder statesman on that line and kind of guide them along. So I think, like, you're asking him to do too much if you're asking him to be doing all that scoring plus kind of defensively responsible for two guys who aren't necessarily the most defensively responsible. So to me, he's met expectations because I've modified my expectations based on the fact that who he's playing with. So I'd go with met with my expectations.
I want to hold it right there. Got Scott Bilk, who's going to join us in the next segment. We're going to come back to this after that. So I want to come back with Laine and Ehlers, because I think they're a really interesting case for two young guys, getting into their, continuing their NHL careers. Scott Billick of NHL.com. He's the Jets correspondent. He's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We want your texts and tweets throughout the show as we go through our expectation rankings for the Winnipeg Jets. You can send us your tweets via our Twitter feed, @IllegalCurve. Might even read them on air. Or you can do it via text message like this fine, I don't know if it's a gentleman or a lady, but this fine person texted us to 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. This is pretty funny. That was rough for Corey Perry yesterday. Isn't he a perennial Lady Bing candidate? I hope that doesn't change the clean game he typically plays. So that's a good quality text. I chose to read it on air.
I suspect Winnipeggers are still a little bit upset about the Matthew Perreault slash.
I suspect you're probably right. For now, let's get on to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From NHL.com, he is the Winnipeg Jets correspondent. Scott Billick is our guest. Scott, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning.
Scott,
nice and early today.
Yes, bright and early. Thank you for waking up with us. We appreciate it. Scott, this Jets team just continues to roll. 7-2-1 in the last 10. I mean, we can go through the numbers. They lost those first two games. Since then, they're 12-5-3 on the season. When they lost those first two games, we haven't had an opportunity to speak with you on air since the start of the season.
Mm-hmm.
When they lost those first two games, did you see any signs, really, that this is what the team was going to turn into?
that's an interesting question. I think, at least from a media standpoint, you watch them lose those first two games, you're like, oh, here we go again. It's going to be one of those seasons. And, you look at their acquisition and bringing in Steve Mason and him not having, the best two starts. And then you're not too sure what Connor Hellebuck's going to look like because he hasn't played since last year. And, you don't know what his summer, he talked about his summer and that sort of thing. But I think it's kind of interesting that they kind of turned out this way. And to see them playing so well is, I think it kind of a shock to the system for a lot of Jets fans to see them at this point of this season, doing so well when this has just never been the case, I guess, since they've come back. I don't think, they haven't had a start like this. If you look at, I was just reading the Jets notes this morning, and if they win tonight or in the next like two games, it'll be to get their 15th win before their 23rd game would be a new team record. I think that's, it's kind of speaks to how this team is kind of, they took those two games, compartmentalized them, and that was it. And then, they left those games there, and from there they've been unreal. And, you know, you look at since even, you know, I think Dennis Bayak had a comment last night, or maybe it was somebody else, but, you know, since March 13th of last season, the Jets are 24-7-4, and it's the third best record in the NHL during that time frame. And not, you know, the end of the season, Jets are out of it. You know, they're not playing for much, so, you know, they go out there and they get a few wins and that sort of thing. But, you know, then you tack it on to this year and you kind of see this progression with this team that's been, you know, something that, yeah, like I said earlier, people haven't seen before.
You know, Scott, we know it's a big year for Jacob Trouba in the last year of his contract. How would you assess Trouba's play in the first 22 games this year?
So-so, I guess is how I'd put it. You know, there's been times where he's been that dominant shut down defenseman that, you know, the Jets have, you know, I guess envisioned him and fans have seen him before. And there's times, you know, over the last, even on this road trip, there's been some times where you're like, you know, like what's going on with Jake, and trying to figure out, you know, he wants a big contract. He wants, you know, that sort of thing and whatever. And, you know, you would look at his play this year and you'd be like, well, maybe he doesn't, you know, maybe that's not in the cards for him right now, just from, you know, some of the giveaways. And, you know, you're watching Trouba and you're like, you know, when's he going to wake up in this game? And, you know, I don't know what it is. Maybe it is that, you know, he is looking for a contract, and, you know, in a contract here, he's not kind of, you know, maybe playing as well as he'd want to. You know, he's playing with Josh Morrissey, who seems to be kind of stalwart back there. They changed up those pairings was today Saturday, so on, I guess it was on Thursday, or on Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I don't know. I think he just he's had kind of that slow start to the year that maybe you haven't always seen from Jacob. You know, at least last year, you know, when he came back after his kind of holdout or whatever you want to call it, you know, he played well and he put up a career year. And then this year it's kind of, it started slow this year. I mean, that's kind of the only way you can really put it, I guess.
Scott, you noted on Twitter yesterday, and I told you I'd ask you about it today, but that Connor Hellebuyck has been able to bounce back following a game in which he gives up 5 goals. Do you think that that is a function of adjustments he makes in his game, or is it a team as a whole making a collective effort to be better defensively?
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, you look at Connor, and he talks, you know, you go back to what he talked about this summer, the biomechanics. You know, there's some of the things that are kind of turned into a joke up in the press box just because of how he's used them before. But, you know, you look at, you know, just the way he's been able to, I guess, throw out the game, the bad games. And you look at his record last year, and there were some games where he'd let 4 goals, and the next night he'd let 3, or he'd let in 5, and the next night he'd let in 5. And you remember that one time where he was pulled twice in back-to-back starts and said he liked his game, and that was kind of a, you know, a running thing around here as well. And I think this year he's kind of, I guess it's more of a mental thing than anything, where he's able to throw out those games, not think about them next time he steps on the ice. You know, this time he had a game in between where he could, because Steve Mason started, and so he had a game, but even then, you know, that can play on a goalie more, cause he's got longer time to think about it. But he's bounced back well. I mean, I think he's averaging like .970 save percentage in the 3 games where he's let in 5 after the night, or the game after that he plays. So yeah, I think for him it's a mental thing, and he's just done extremely well at dealing with the adversity in his own game. And then, yeah, like you said, the Jets. I mean, you know, I don't think, and I think you guys were talking about earlier, they haven't lost back to back in regulation in a long time, and you know, they you know. Bad games for the Jets are kind of the same thing. It's this team seems to be more mature mentally, and they're able to kind of throw away the last game, come back. And you look at a guy like Nick Ehlers. I mean, so he was kind of sat in the game on Monday in the third period, didn't have his best game. Comes back the next night, gets an assist. Comes back the night after that, or last night, gets 2 goals and assist. Has a great start to the game. Now, I think guys are, when they have a bad game, you know, instead of letting it slide and continue to have more and more bad games, they're somehow able to now put that behind them and just, you know, start to play better again.
Scott Billick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott covers the Winnipeg Jets as the correspondent for NHL.com. Scott, we know that last year was such a write-off for Tyler Myers that this year fans didn't really know what to expect. He's been healthy, obviously played in all 22 games so far for the Jets. Just how stabilizing a force has Tyler Myers been on the Jets' back end?
Well, and I think you look at the defense as a whole, and you look at last year's defense, and you look at this year's defense, and you just, well, it was an automatic upgrade to get Tyler Myers back. And Paul Maurice talked about this several times, where it's almost like you acquired a defenseman over the summer because, you know, you got Myers back when he played, you know, X amount of games, very few games last year. I don't know what the correct number is. But, you know, I think he's been well. I think at the start of the year, you kind of looked at Tyler Myers like, man, this guy looks like he hasn't played hockey in a while. And I think that was to be expected. And now you look, you know, he's got 11 points in 22 games. He's played. I think he's, you know, if you want to talk about expectations on Tyler Myers, you know, when you miss almost a full year of hockey, you know, for him to come back, to be that kind of stabilizing force, to play on the PK, to, you know, to just kind of do the things, and he's kind of got back to the, you know, Tyler Myers for a big man. He's got a few dangles to him, and you've kind of seen him gain his confidence over the year. And the guy's got 2 game-winning goals this season. I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, just to see him, and then on the back end, he's playing with Kulikov. I'm not sure. You know, I didn't, you know, when I did my grades for the court season, I didn't think Kulikov has been having the best start to the season. But I think, you know, just if you look at last year's third pairing and you look at this year's third pairing, you would take this year's third pairing over last year's in a heartbeat, just because how well they played. And you know, even with the injury to Toby Enstrom now, Ben Chiarot's kind of stepped in and did the dirty to Corey Perry yesterday, which a lot of Jets fans enjoyed quite a bit. And, you know, but I just think that, you know, they have better depth this year. So when a guy like Toby goes out, you're not playing, you haven't played, you know, Ben Chiarot all season. And I think having Tyler Myers back is obviously a tribute to that.
Scott, I don't know if you know this, but the Winnipeg Jets record with Matt Hendricks in the lineup is 10-2-3. In all seriousness, is this exactly what the Jets needed, a veteran on that fourth line?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I don't think if you look at, you know, the analytics, if you look at those, I imagine they don't favor Hendricks too well. But, you know, those are, again, only part of the story. And I think the way that, well, first of all, I mean, if you look even in the last recent games or when Matthew Perreault came back and started playing with Hendricks, I mean, Hendricks has more points. Matthew Perreault was playing well. And all these things were, you know, going well. But I think he's just been that, and, you know, people don't like to talk about these, like, room guys and that sort of thing all the time. But I think he's been, you know, just that positive guy in the room. You know, a guy that kind of, I don't know, kind of just builds the team up at any point, whether they're playing good, whether they're playing bad, kind of always has a smile on his face. I've never, you know, Matt Hendricks is a breath of fresh air for us media types who, you know, looking for a good quote every day, and Hendricks is great for that. But on the ice, I think, you know, he's just, he stabilizes that fourth line and kind of plays the way and encourages the guys he's playing with to play a game that's, you know, consistent with what you'd see a lot of fourth lines around the league, all that, you know, just a grinding game. And you know, with him and Armia's kind of got that skill aspect to him, too, where maybe Hendricks doesn't. So that line's kind of an interesting line where you have, you know, Matthew Perreault obviously drives, you know, obviously a driver possession, you know, a great player in that way. You know, I don't even know if you would call that the fourth line anymore with Perreault on it. That might be the third line or 3A or 3B or whatever. But I think Tyler Myers, or sorry, not Tyler Myers, Matt Hendricks has done, you know, just a good job at doing what he was expected to do, given the role that they brought him in for.
Matt Hendricks actually has the 5th best Corsi on the entire team, which,
well,
is probably,
there you go. Yeah. I'm wrong.
No, it's, I mean, I had to double check. I did a double take on that one as well there, Scott. Scott Billick of NHL.com, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Scott, you know, there's been a lot of consternation about the Jets' second line, and when your team's 14-5-3, that's probably, you know, still not a bad thing when you can have that kind of leeway. But, you know, they seem to have a bit of a coming out party yesterday. But what has been your overall impression of Ehlers, Line A, and Little?
Yeah, and I think it was you that touched on it earlier, where, you know, he's had to kind of, or Brian Little at least has kind of had to, you know, he temper his expectations because he's had to play more defensive game as opposed to an offensive game. And, you know, it's no secret. You watch it on the ice, and they've had to learn how to, you know, build some chemistry together, and that didn't come early. You look at the way that, you know, you have two guys in Ehlers and Laine who are just, you know, you're pure, well, I mean, Laine for sure, pure goal scorer, and Ehlers is this incredible playmaker, and, you know, you look at it last night, and, you know, a pure goal scorer as well. And then you have Brian Little, who's, you know, a very good two-way defenseman. And you're trying to, like, you know, mesh those, you know, those very offensive talents with, you know, a guy who is very responsible in his defensive zone, maybe guys that aren't. And so they've kind of had to figure out how to, I guess, navigate that. And I think, yeah, like, you know, you talked about last night, it was a bit of a coming out party. And, you know, I think that's, you know, true to an extent. And you want to see more from them. And, you know, it's only one game. And yeah, but I think, you know, the last couple of games they've played well as a line. And, you know, I think it's kind of a scary thought to think of if that line's gone and Shifley's line's gone, or even if both of them aren't, you know, one's on and one's off. I mean, when you can have that kind of, you know, I guess something to lean on if one line isn't going and the other line is, I mean, that's a scary thought for the Jets. And when both lines are going, I don't know how you beat a team that's, you know, with that much firepower in the top two lines.
Scott, last question for you here. Now that Brent Burns has scored his first goal of the year, which is crazy to think that he just scored his first goal of the year, is Buff going to get his first tonight?
Came close yesterday. Had a couple. You could see he wanted it badly on that one shift where he had those two pretty good chances.
Yeah, no, I think he's ready to throw that monkey off his back, right? I mean, I think he's...
Literally.
I don't think he's, you know... You know, and you've seen Dustin Byfuglien over the last, you know, two or three games, and Blake Wheeler, you know, mentioned that, you know, he's pissed off and he's not happy about, you know, I guess, I don't know, well, Wheeler didn't say, he didn't say he's not happy about his game, but I don't think Dustin Byfuglien is happy with his start offensively, of course. I think in the first few games, he probably wasn't happy with his game defensively. Will he get a goal tonight? I mean, that's anybody's guess.
You don't have to answer Ezzy's questions. It's okay, Scott. You know, we don't listen to him on the show. You don't have to humor him. We don't.
Fair enough.
Okay.
But you know, I think it's coming for him. I think he's doing the things now that would lead to him scoring goals. Maybe he wasn't doing that. You know, when he's chasing guys at the blue line and that sort of thing and taking bad penalties, you know, you're not scoring from the box. You're not scoring when, you know, you're not playing well. And I think Dustin Byfuglien's kind of started to play well again, started to, you know, be true to his, you know, that physical game where, you know, guys are, you know, he's intimidating and that sort of thing. And when Dustin Byfuglien is intimidating on the ice, I think that's when he's at his best. And I think that's when guys are, you know, maybe guys are, you know, second guess going up against Buff because you don't want to get creamed and that sort of thing. And that opens up opportunities for him. And then when he's, you know, driving down low last night and a nice little wrap around, he tried to, you know, put it right underneath the pad there, and didn't work so well. But I think he's just doing the right things. He's picking his spots maybe a little bit better than he was at the beginning of the year. And I just think, you know, eventually, you know, when you're playing the right way like that, you know, eventually he's gonna kind of get that goal. And I mean, I'm sure when that goes, you know, he'll probably start scoring maybe two or three more after that. It's just, yeah, maybe there's a mentality thing here where, or a mental thing that he's just trying to get over, and that just comes with time.
Scott Bill covers the Winnipeg Jets for NHL.com.
So if Buff doesn't score tonight, we're blaming Scotty.
Basically, that's what we're doing. Scott, right. Thank you for your time, buddy. We'll see you on Monday at the rink.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Scott. Take care. When we come back, we continue our expectations rankings for the Winnipeg Jets forwards. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Down to Perreault. Perreault behind the net for Ehlers. Ehlers being watched by Cody. In front. Patrick Laine scores! Patrick Laine on the power play.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. We're continuing our evaluation of the Jets at the quarter mark of the season, matching expectations, exceeding expectations, or underachieving. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online. online at zappiagroup.com. Be like Frank. Frank's tweeting at us a whole bunch, so you should be like Frank as well. Tweet at us at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you, your comments. You can also send us comments via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply.
Tell you this much right now, Drew. Frank is exceeding my expectations. You're not, though.
That's okay. I never exceed your expectations there, as we continue with Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers. That's where we left off last segment, or the segment prior to Scott joining us. Patrick Laine, gentlemen, 11 goals, 6 assists for 17 points in 22 games. Sort of a quiet 11 goals, if that's possible. You know, 6 of them coming on the power play, so only 5 of the 11 in 5-on-5 or even strength situations. As a exceeding, matching, or underachieving for Patrick Laine through 22 games of his sophomore season.
I'm going to give Patrick Laine a 0. He's matched my expectations, not a 0.
Yes, he's matched your expectations. Yeah. Not a plus 1, right. Not a minus 1, but an even.
Right, and guys, we remember what Patrick Laine said after that game in Minnesota, and then he proceeded to go on an 8-game point streak. He said that, you know, hockey wasn't fun for him and he was struggling out there. He had 4 games where he didn't have any points, and you just don't expect that out of an offensive phenom like Laine. But for me, it's not just the point totals and that 4-game stretch where he wasn't really good, because since then, he's been stellar, I would say. I think that he has struggled without the puck, and at times, you know, he's coughed up the puck, not only in his own zone, but he's coughed up the puck in the offensive zone, and he's looked a little bit disoriented at times, and he hasn't been good 5-on-5. So am I saying that Patrick Laine isn't a superstar and he isn't an excellent goal scorer? Of course I'm not. I predicted at the beginning of the year that Laine would score 50 goals. Now, it's going to be tough for him to get to 50. He could get to 40, but it's not only about scoring goals. A great player is not just based on how good he is at scoring. He has to have a well-rounded game. And to me, when I compare Nikolai Ehlers to Patrick Laine, I think Nikolai Ehlers has demonstrated that he's better on the defensive side of the puck. Now, Nikolai Ehlers has been in the NHL for an extra year over Patrick Laine, so we should mention that. But for me, to give him exceeding expectations, he has to be better in every area of the ice. And for me, you know, the goals are there. You know, you expect him to be around 11 goals or 12 goals at this point of the year. But to me, he's still making the same mistakes that he made last year.
Dave?
You know, I can't disagree with this. I would say he's met my expectations. You know, the offensive numbers are going to be what they are, because with Patrick Laine, that's what you get. But the fact is that, you know, in the NHL, you can't just be a one-trick pony. You have to really have a rounded game and have a few dimensions to your game. And to me, the casualness with which he plays, and again, I'm not trying to, like, you know, again, the Jets are doing extremely well, but if you're nitpicking, if you're trying to look at the totality of a guy's game, I think there's areas of improvement for Patrick Laine. I think Patrick Laine would admit, he has admitted, that there's are areas that he needs to improve in. So clearly his ability to score is never going to be in doubt, but it's the other aspects of his game, you know, with the puck and without the puck, as Ezzy just touched on, that need improvement and are improving. And again, he's a young guy. We take for granted sometimes that these guys are a little older and a little more mature than they are. And then you watch them play that video game in the second period, mm-hmm. and you realize they're young guys and they have a lot of growing to do. And that's why you have leaders like Blake Wheeler to show them the way. So the fact is that, you know, is the totality of Patrick Laine's game where it needs to be? No, but I would say he's met my expectations for the season.
Nikolai Ehlers is the last member of that quote-unquote second line. He's got 10 goals and 7 assists, 17 points in 22 games. Only 3 of his 10 goals have come on the power play, though, so he's producing more 5-on-5 despite that recent slump he was in that he broke out of yesterday in Anaheim. Exceeding, matching, underachieving for Nikolai Ehlers.
For me, Ehlers is matching expectations. And, you know, we talked about, you know, yesterday he snapped his goal drought. He hadn't scored a goal in 8 games, but it's not just that. I mean, 10 goals in 22 games is pretty darn good for a player in his third year in the National Hockey League. But for me, I think Ehlers and Laine, because they're so talented, you're talking about arguably top 10 talents in the NHL, certainly top 20 talents in the NHL, and that's why they were both high draft picks. But for me, sometimes both of these players try to do too much with the puck. And that might be because they're so talented that they know they can do it. But again, this doesn't mean that I don't think Nikolaj Ehlers is a great player. But for me, the reason why he doesn't exceed expectations is I think we all knew that the goal totals and assist totals were going to be there. Nikolaj Ehlers is a playmaker. He's one of the fastest guys in the league. But for me, sometimes he leaves more to be desired as far as his well-rounded game. And sometimes I think he tries to do too much and he doesn't keep his game simple. And we saw him benched by Paul Maurice a couple of nights ago because he tried to do too much in his own zone. So for me, it's kind of similar to Laine, even though I think Ehlers has already shown that he's a better defensive forward than Laine in an extra year in the National Hockey League, but I can't give him that plus one just because I think sometimes he overplays the puck.
Dave, anything to add to that? Or you're
no,
good
I agree with Ez on that one.
The ostensibly third-line center, I don't know if he's the third-line center or the fourth-line center, is Adam Lowry. He's got 3 goals and an assist for 4 points. He missed a whole bunch of games with that injury, but he's played 13 games this season. Your thoughts on Adam Lowry, how would you evaluate his performance through the 13 games that he's played this year?
Yeah, as you mentioned, Drew, he hasn't played the full 22 games, so it's tough to kind of give him an accurate mark here or an accurate rating, but I would say he's matched my expectations. He had the career year last year, but since he's been back, he's been a staple of that third line like we've seen the last several years, doing what he does, creating havoc in front of the net, using his physicality. So again, you'd like for him to play more games to give him more of a complete grade, but for me, he's doing exactly what you'd expect out of him.
No, I agree. I think he's been solid. I think he ideally would go as your fourth line center. But I know that Coach Maurice loves him as the third line center. But I think if you could have Adam Lowry in that 4C role, then that just really reinforces the depth of your team. But I think it's tough to judge his season because he missed a big chunk of time. But I think overall, he's done the things that you want. And you saw in the LA game, against his dad, who's the assistant coach, he had a really nice game. He played well. That line played well as a whole. And that line, somewhat surprisingly, has been a really nice kind of addition for this Jets team and a piece that we didn't really see them having.
And I think, over the last couple of years, Drew, Lowry has really embraced that checking forward role. Mm-hmm. And he knows that the Jets have two number one lines right now. They know, guys like Laine and Wheeler and Scheifele are scoring almost every night. So he knows that, if he chips in the odd goal every 2 or 3 games, that's fine. So I think, he's really paced that third line.
Last one, and quickly, guys, Adam Lowry's two line mates, Andrew Kopp and Brandon Tanev, they've both played all 22 games. Kopp with 3 goals and 2 assists for 5 points. Tanev for 2 goals, 2 assists for 4 points. Matching, exceeding, underachieving for Andrew Kopp and Brandon Tanev. As quickly, though, please.
I would say they've matched expectations, and I think, we've seen Brandon Tanev turn into one of the best shot blockers in the National Hockey League, but they've been very good in that energy third-line role. And, you expect, a little bit of offense out of Andrew Kopp and Brandon Tanev, and we've started to see it a little bit over the last couple of weeks. But, I expected them, now that I think about it, for me, Brandon Tanev, I expected to be in the American Hockey League. So I might say that, Tanev individually has exceeded expectations because I didn't expect him to be, starting 13 forward for the Winnipeg Jets. Andrew Kopp has been a staple of that fourth line. So, they've matched or exceeded expectations in the sense that they've, provided that checking energy role that the Jets, so desperately need.
I would have to say exceeded, and I'll tell you why. Because I expected, as he just touched on, Brandon Tanev to be either with the AHL Moose or the 13th or 14th forward on this team. I really didn't anticipate him being enmeshed in the day-to-day games the way he has been and the way Coach Maurice seems to be relying on him. So he's exceeded my expectations from the perspective of he's playing a lot more than I anticipated. Andrew Kopp, I have to give Andrew Kopp credit. He's tried to become a little bit of a jack-of-all-trades and kind of had to, adjust his game, not playing that center role, which he's kind of used to, and playing more of a diverse role than he probably was used to playing at the University of Michigan and then, with the Moose and with the Jets even. So I think I would say he's exceeded my expectations from this perspective of adjusting to the role he's been given.
We'll come back to this after our next interview. We're looking at the defense and the special teams still to come. Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune joins us next. The Wild are in town on Monday to play the Jets. We talked to Sarah about the Jets' Central Division rival. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Is on it. Myers trying to make it a 2-on-1. Pop with Myers. Myers! Myers! scores! Tyler Myers, shorthanded, off the bar and in. And the Winnipeg Jets have opened up a two-goal lead with their second shorthanded goal of the year.
Trying to get a hold of Sarah McClellan to discuss the Minnesota Wild. Until we're joined by Sarah, we'll continue our look at the Jets forwards as we continue with our rankings or our expectation evaluations through a quarter mark of the season. We still have the, the quote-unquote fourth line to do. Let's start with the free agent signing late in the year was Matt Hendricks. He was injured early in the season, missed the first number of games. He's played 15 of the Jets' 22 games, 2 goals, 2 assists. There was a lot of, for lack of a better word, controversy around the Jets' signing of Matt Hendricks. Has Matt Hendricks exceeded your expectations? Has he matched them, or has he underachieved in the 15 games he's played for the Jets?
I don't know why there was controversy. They brought him in as a veteran center to win faceoffs and to kill penalties. So for me, there shouldn't have been any controversy. I think you're getting exactly what you expected out of Matt Hendricks. He's been a very stabilizing presence on that fourth line. And we talked to Scott Billick about it. I mean, Matt Hendricks is excellent in the dressing room. And you know, for me, I don't measure him on necessarily goals or assists. He's chipped in a little bit offensively. But for me, it's what he does on the defensive side of the game. And it's the characteristics he brings in the dressing room.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined now by Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune to discuss the Minnesota Wild. The Jets' Central Division rival will be in town on Monday night to meet the Jets. Sarah, welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Sarah. The Wild 11-8-3 so far this season. Haven't seen them since a few weeks back when the Jets were able to defeat the Wild. You know, they're sort of an interesting team. They had the great regular season last year. Then they flamed out in the first round of the playoffs to the St. Louis Blues. You know, how would you evaluate the play of the Wild recently? Because they're sort of flying underneath the radar in the Central Division, especially when you look at the Blues who are playing so well and the Jets here who are playing so well. How would you evaluate the Wild thus far?
You know, I think it was a little bit of an uneven start for the team, a little up and down, and that's probably when Winnipeg saw them last. They seemed to be, you know, still searching for their stride, and part of that was due to the injuries. They got ravaged early, losing some key players. They still haven't had, you know, their full complement, obviously, with Zach Parise still out after back surgery. But I think resilience has kind of been a hallmark of this team and has helped them get to this point where, you know, they've gone 6-1-1 in their last 8 games. They're finding ways to bank points. And, you know, it's kind of been a formula of late that, you know, sustaining the team that you wonder, is it really going to sustain them long term? You know, they have only a handful of guys that are contributing offensively. They're not getting production from the bottom half of their lineup, but the guys who are producing are on a tear. I mean, you know, Niederreiter, who scored in 6 straight games. He just tied the franchise record with his goal last night at home when they hosted the Avalanche. And they're getting timely saves. I don't think their goaltenders have robbed a game for them recently, but they're getting the saves when it matters most. So they're finding a way to win right now. Like I said, I'm not sure if this is a style that's going to be sustainable because you are going to need contributions from everyone, and you're going to need to be a little bit cleaner in your own end, but it's working for them now, and they're finding ways to inch up the standings and get points.
Sarah, I know that you're new to the Minnesota Wild beat coming over from the Arizona Coyotes, but you mentioned, you know, that lack of secondary scoring. They brought in Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno from Buffalo in that trade, and you know, they've had varying degrees of success. How big of a concern is that for the Wild, or is it not as big of a concern knowing that Zach Parise and Charlie Coyle are going to return eventually?
You know, I think it was a concern probably more chiefly a week ago, you know, when it seemed like there wasn't a lot of guys able to contribute, and that's still kind of the case. But I think what's kind of maybe pacifying some concern right now is the power play's clicking. Like I said, Niederreiter's on a roll. They just seem to find those goals when they need them. And, you know, like yesterday when they held off the Avalanche, it took a shootout, but they found a way. But I think when you do look big picture, I think that is concerning that you haven't had that depth of scoring, like you mentioned, that the team acquired in the summer, you know, to have. Part of that deal, obviously, was the cap room that it created to be able to let them go out and re-sign some key players. But I think that is a concern because we know how tight the West is, and if you look at the teams that thrive and have success, they're getting production from throughout their lineup. You know, so I think right now, with kind of the start that the team have, the fact that they're able to kind of, like I said, get points out of seven of their last eight games, I think that's the focus is, you know, we have maybe had to play a little bit of catch up, and now we'll take the points any way we can. But long term, you know, I think that is a concern, is where is this offense going to come from if it's not coming from Niederreiter, Jason Zucker, or Charlie Coyle, or Eric Staal. That's probably going to be an issue to watch moving forward on this team to kind of gauge, you know, where they kind of stand in this playoff race.
Yeah, sorry, Sarah. Coyle is back in the lineup. I misspoke there.
Yeah, he's been back for a couple games now, and you know, back after obviously breaking his leg. And I think obviously going to be positioned as a key player, but I think he has a little bit of a leash to find his legs. You know, I think it's finding that timing now. You can work off the ice, and he said he basically rehabbed for, you know, the bulk of his recovery. But there's nothing like strapping on skates and competing at game pace. And so I look for him to be a spark for this team moving forward, but I think probably, you know, maybe it'll take a few weeks just for him to kind of find that groove back.
Sarah, last year we saw Devan Dubnyk in the net, it seemed like, every single night for the Minnesota Wild. This year we've got Alex Stalock coming in, the Minnesota native. He played mostly for the Iowa Wild last year, but how has he looked so far in the six games you've seen him with Minnesota?
You know, I think he's looked as advertised, what you want from a backup, somebody to come in and give you steady minutes. And, you know, I don't think he's been rewarded as much as his play has indicated what he's provided for the team when he's gone in. You know, I think that's why the team was happy. He played last night, obviously, against the Avalanche, with Dubnyk set to go today against the Blues. And, you know, I think the team really wanted to finally get him a win, because every time he's been in the net, he's given them a chance to win, and I think that's all you can ask for from a backup. So, you know, I look for him to continue to find those spot starts to kind of come in and let Devan get a mental break, because obviously he's thrived under a heavy workload. That's kind of been his MO since he landed in Minnesota after that trade with Arizona a couple years ago. But I think it's that balance is key, especially for a team that has the type of playoff aspirations that the Wild has. You know, finding that healthy balance of keeping Dubnyk on the ice, you know, in that number one role, but having someone who the team has confidence in to come in and win a game every now and then. And I think that's their view on Stalock.
Sarah McClellan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sarah covers the Minnesota Wild for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Sarah, the Wild sent Joel Eriksson Ek down to the AHL earlier in the week. They sent him alongside Luke Kunin. Both of them are former first-round picks. I don't think that there were many expectations for Kunin this year. He was really only up with the team due to the litany of injuries. But how disappointed were the Wild in having to send Joel Eriksson Ek down to the AHL? He hadn't scored since opening night in Detroit.
I think they looked at it as an opportunity for him to find his game. And you're right, obviously they saw what was going on, and he just looked like he didn't have the same kind of pop in his game that he did at the start. And, you know, I think the expectation was he would go down and, you know, take what the experience he gained so far at the NHL level this season, and then play at that speed in the minors, play an NHL game in the AHL. And that would hopefully kind of spark some confidence and make him feel good about his game again. And I think that kind of got lost in the shuffle, is that, you know, partly due to injury, like you said, they've had to put young players in position where they're eating regular minutes in an NHL lineup that, you know, if maybe you had everybody healthy, or, you know, maybe if there was this one more acquisition, they might not be there, but they are. And it's easy to forget that they're young and they're still trying to, you know, find that feeling where they belong. And so I think it was just a pause button for him. I expect him to be back at some point. I don't think the plan is to keep him down there all year, but, you know, this is the process. And I think, you know, maybe a move like this is one that helps spark him to come up and maybe they, you know, he goes back and centers and anchors that third line, and they start to get some offensive production from that unit. So, you know, he'll be an interesting player to watch as he kind of maybe comes back in the mix eventually and see if this kind of break, you know, pause to go to the minors was kind of maybe the jolt he needed to find the offensive contributions at the NHL level.
Sarah, you mentioned earlier the Minnesota Wild have been playing better as of late. They've won their last two games. They've won six of their last 10. But how much pressure is on Bruce Boudreau to get this team not only into the playoffs, but go on a long playoff run?
Yeah, I think that's been the expectation for a couple of years now, is translating that regular season success into, you know, playoff potential and having a team go on a run. And you know, especially after last season, I think there was, you know, obviously, you know, a helping of disappointment after going on this regular season run that ranked as the best in franchise history and then fizzling out in the first round in five games. So I think there's that sense from everybody inside the organization is, you know, now is the time. And, you know, the window is being propped open pretty much by the same cast of characters. It really looks, if you look at the contracts and you look at who's on the books, that this is pretty much their team. This looks like the core, you know, barring any drastic, dramatic changes. And so, you know, if this is it, you know, it really is going to be up to these players then how long they keep this window of opportunity open, because, you know, maybe that outside help, that big name acquisition, maybe it's not coming because it looks like they've gone all in with this group. So, I get that sense being around the organization this last little while that everybody kind of feels that urgency to win now, and that's just the philosophy. And when you have the success that they've had in the regular season, it makes sense that now the pressure is on to translate that into the postseason.
Sarah, Chris Stewart scored 6 goals in his first 6 games of the season and then hasn't scored in the last 15. But then last night he was chosen to be the third shooter and I believe got the shootout winner for the Wild. So what's changed in his game, and why would Coach Boudreau go with Chris Stewart, who clearly hasn't been hot offensively, as the third shooter?
Yeah, his shootout numbers, though, career-wise, haven't been too bad, though. I think that was probably going in the memory bank and remembering what he's done before. I think that was his 10th score in 25 tries or so. And Boudreau kind of said after the game, he could, you know, he was staring him down. He kind of felt like he had to put Stewart in or he'd be mad at him. But, you know, I think with Chris, he said he has to get back to playing a physical style of hockey. And I think early on when the pucks were going in, it's easy to get away from your strengths then, because you kind of have this rhythm around the net and, you know, maybe you're just looking for the shots, looking for the goals. But I think for him, he was a healthy scratch Monday against the Devils. And I think for him, he realized that I have to get back to playing to, you know, the way that I am. And that's what will produce the goals. But that if it doesn't, that's also valuable to this team. Being someone who can get up and down the wing, add a little bit of size and muscle, and just make it hard on the opponent on the forecheck. I think he realized there's value still in that. Yes, this team needs goals and it needs offense, and that's what everyone signs up to do. But there's other ways to contribute, and I think he kind of realized that. And maybe the shootout goal is the spark that he needs, because obviously, as he proved to start the season, he can be a threat around the net. So he's another player they're going to need, I think, some offense from down the road, and they can get him rolling again. It certainly helps alleviate the pressure of the top two lines to score.
Sarah McClellan covers the Minnesota Wild for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Sarah, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
It's good to have you in the Central.
Thanks,
Sarah.
We'll see you soon.
We'll see you on Monday. Thanks, Sarah. When we come back, we continue our evaluation of the Jets' defense. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to the Twitter user, A Saint, who referred to our program as a soothing verbal back rub, which is, I think, a compliment, because yep. It's far better than being called nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah, you guys are really abrasive to my ears.
Yes, you make my ears bleed is, I think, what the alternative was. So apparently we are a soothing verbal back rub, which is certainly nice to hear.
The segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli is your destination. They got the big screen TVs, they got great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's.
By the way, Drew, I think I finally figured out this chair.
Oh, yeah? You think you're no longer sinking?
Yeah, it's not sinking.
Okay, good.
Which you don't expect most chairs to sink. So
it's true, but...
I guess I'm putting my feet in the right place or whatever you told me to do. It's working.
It is a bit of a confusing chair, admittedly. There is a learning curve for using the chair, but I'm glad that you have matched it and or exceeded it. See what I did there? Leading into the segment where we're talking about people's expectations. Have these players matched your expectations? Have they exceeded your expectations? Or are they underachieving through a quarter of the season?
When do we get to evaluate you, Drew?
You can evaluate me anytime you want, Dave. We're going to start or we're going to...
I already gave Drew a minus one.
Yeah, but you gave me a minus one before the show even started. That's the problem.
I'd give you a minus two if I could.
Let's look at the Winnipeg Jets defense. Why don't we start with the guy who didn't play at all last year, and that's Tyler Myers. And he's new to the team more or less, not new, but you know, when you miss an entire season, for the most part, and then come back, you're not sure what to expect of Tyler Myers this year. He's played all the games for the Jets so far. We talked about it with Scott Billick in that 9:30 segment. How would you evaluate the performance of Tyler Myers so far? Plus one, minus one, or even through 22 games?
I think that's an easy one for me. Tyler Myers gets a plus one, and mm-hmm. I think he's saved the best for this road trip here. He got himself on the score sheet yesterday afternoon against Anaheim. He had a good game against the LA Kings, and he found himself with a two-point night against the Nashville Predators. You mentioned that he missed the majority of last season, but for me, it's the way Tyler Myers, goes about his business and leads by example. He lets his play on the ice, really speak for him. He's not like... When you hear him speak, after games, he's not the loudest guy, and I'm not in the dressing room, obviously, but he's a very soft-spoken guy. But, for me, the way he plays on a night-in and night-out basis has been incredible, and I would argue that, he's been one of the best defensemen for the Jets. For me, it's Josh Morrissey and Tyler Myers, but for me, it's just that steadying influence he has on this group.
Dave, how would you evaluate Tyler Myers?
Yeah, it's always hard when a player misses that much time because you could look at it from one perspective, saying that they're going to be refreshed, but in another, that means they've missed a significant amount of time from the game, and it's hard to get back into that form. It's one thing to train, it's another thing to actually play games. And the truth is, when I saw Tyler Myers kind of fall and we thought he was injured when his foot got hit along the Jets net, mm-hmm. I was like, well, here we go again. That's the last thing you want to see. And then of course he came back at that game. So he seems to be playing with a renewed sense of self. And I like Tyler Myers' game so far this year. I mean, there's a few warts to his game every once in a while, but overall, I've been very impressed. And the fact is, you've got Tyler Myers playing on your third pairing. I mean, that shows the depth of the Jets' defense. So I like Tyler Myers. I'd say he's exceeded my expectations.
We have to stop using warts on this show. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to have warts on my hands, and I used to have to get them taken off. Let's just stop using warts.
Okay, we are no longer using that term.
I don't think we should talk to you for the rest of the show after that. Nobody cares about that. This is like Newman's bunion stories that Kramer buys. Nobody wants to hear about your bunions. Dmitry Kulikov has been paired with Tyler Myers for the majority of the season. Kulikov, of course, was the offseason addition, coming over in free agency from the Buffalo Sabres. One goal, five assists, 6 points in 20 games for Dmitry Kulikov. Might be getting paid too much money, but how would you evaluate Dmitry Kulikov thus far? Matching, exceeding, or underachieving?
I would say he's matched him, and the reason I say that is because I didn't have very high expectations to begin with. He's coming off pretty bad season with the Sabres, and so you're thinking to yourself, is there any chance he's going to get back to the way he played with the Panthers and that sort of form when he was able to go to Buffalo, get that big money, and you think, okay, well, can he get to that? Well, he hasn't got to that, but again, like I said, in terms of, if you remove the money aspect of it, if you're just talking about his play on the ice, then I think he's been fine. I think he's played well enough. I mean, he probably would have been well advised to choose a different number. But like overall, I think like his game has been pretty steady. I mean, he's not, like I said, he's not great. He's made a couple of bad calculate, you know, passes, you know, errant passes. But overall, I mean, I would say he's met him because I didn't have high expectations for Dmitry Kulikov.
He definitely has a few warts to his game, let me tell you.
Oh!
You're a moron. God help you, you're a moron.
You know what, Drew, I'm going to say matching expectations. And, you know, you're not going to get much offensively out of Dmitry Kulikov. You mentioned, you know, he's got 6 points in 20 games. You expect him to be kind of that, you know, 20-point, 25-point defenseman. But, you know, Kulikov can skate, Dave. Kulikov's always been able to move the puck, and I like that he's got like that physical element to his game. He can get nasty every once in a while, and I think the Jets have needed that, especially, you know, Mark Stewart kind of played that that physical role for the Jets in years past, and, you know, Dave mentioned his number, of course, wearing the same number that Mark Stewart used to wear. Same. So for me, Kulikov has been, you know, as advertised, and, you know, sure, maybe, you know, the Jets overpaid him a little bit, but, you know, what can we do about that? Exactly. So, you know, Kulikov and Myers have formed a really nice pair there. You know, Paul Maurice relies on him, you know, quite often. So I don't have many complaints about Kulikov's game. Sure, you know, sometimes he's prone to giving up the puck in his own zone. But for me, you know, since the beginning of the season, he's definitely cleaned that up a little bit.
Josh Morrissey is playing with, has played with Jacob Trouba for a lot of the year and Dustin Byfuglien for a lot of the year. How would you evaluate Morrissey in his second season? 2 goals, 3 assists, 5 points in 22 games for Josh Morrissey, Dave.
I would say he's a plus one. I don't think there's any doubt about it. His play just continues to get better and better and better. And he's, you know, he's an extraordinarily steady player. And it's kind of funny to me when I hear people talking about how they're surprised that Josh Morrissey hits. I mean, that's his game. It's been his game his whole career. I mean, whether it's the AHL and junior, he's a physical player and he's small. So people don't anticipate smaller type defensemen as being aggressive, but Josh Morrissey's an aggressive player. So no, he's just been so steady for the Jets. He really just does a lot that you don't focus on, and you tend not to focus on. But if you actually were just solely looking at a defenseman, Josh Morrissey is your prototypical, you know, first pairing guy in my mind. Like, he's just so smooth. He's such a good skater. He's smart with his stick. He really is. I mean, you know, physically, is he in tough when he goes up against a guy like, you know, Ryan Getzlaff? Sure, you know, that's going to be a tough matchup for him. But that's the whole point. That's where guys like Tobias Enstrom and Josh Morrissey, who are smaller, excel, because they're smarter players and they use their brain to gain position. So to me, Josh Morrissey is a plus one.
Yeah, he's also a plus one for me. And, you know, you talk about, you know, being on that top pair with Jacob Trouba. You forget that he's 22 years old. And, you know, Dave mentions his physicality. He actually had 10 hits against the LA Kings. I know that was brought up on the TSN 1290 broadcast yesterday afternoon. You know, Josh Morrissey, again, he shows such poise beyond his years, and he's got such a well-rounded game. I don't think he's ever going to be a 45 or 50-point defenseman, but that's not him. He's more of a prototypical shutdown defenseman, but he can contribute offensively when he needs to. So for me, plus one, had high expectations for him, and he's exceeded them.
Dustin Byfuglien. You know, you mentioned he's still looking for his first goal on the season. He's got 10 assists in 20 games. You know, certainly a rough start to the year for Byfuglien. Then he sat out those couple games in Edmonton and Vancouver. You know, how would you evaluate Dustin Byfuglien? Matching, exceeding, or underachieving?
For me, Drew, it's matching. And, you know, I don't mind that he hasn't scored a goal yet, because he's certainly got his chances. But I think he's shown a different poise and commitment in the defensive zone. And, you know, Byfuglien, I think, often doesn't get enough credit for how well he plays defensively and how he uses his physicality and his skating ability. Sometimes he looks a little bit awkward when he skates, but he's actually one of the best skaters on the Jets. So for me, you know, he probably would exceed expectations if he has a few more goals. But, you know, for me, he's been pretty good overall.
Yeah, I agree with Ezzy. I'd say he's matched my expectations because, you know, again, whether he scores or doesn't score, the fact of the matter is that he's a big guy who uses his size to his advantage. And we see that. And he gets in guys' faces. He gets physical into games. He gets his teammates into the games. And he's solid enough defensively that you're still happy with his play. They've scaled back his minutes a little bit, I think, this season. But overall, I think he's matched my expectations.
When we come back, we'll finish up the Jets' defense. We'll look at the goaltending. We'll talk about the coaching, the special teams, and the general manager evaluation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.